Fan Drive Time, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, Ben Ennis, Blake Murphy. And again, you're just joining us. Big old trade in the National Hockey League as the Vancouver Canucks have traded their captain, Bo Horvat, on his way to Long Island to join the New York Islanders as the Canucks acquire Anthony Beauvillier, centerman, Atu Ratti, former second-round pick, and a protected 2023 first-round pick from the Islanders, who are currently not inside the playoff picture in the Eastern Conference, Blake.
By the way, Pierre LeBrun updating that if it's... So Elliott had mentioned it's top 12 protected for this year. Unprotected next year. Right. So we're headed to a scenario where things don't turn around for the Isles. We got a Panthers Canadian part two.
Dude, honestly, that changes a lot of how I view this trade because, you know, on the surface, you're looking at, okay, what does it convey to if there is no draft pick coming your way in the upcoming draft for the Islanders? Because, you know, odds are it's they're going to be a lottery team this year, so the Canucks are not getting that draft pick. And if it, like, conveys to, like, I don't know, second or a third rounder or, you know, whatever down the line, that it goes just 1 year later totally unprotected in a sport that's very chaotic. But even still, like, okay, so the Islanders are not a playoff team now. They add one very good player. They have a serviceable player going the other way. Need to be in the playoff picture next year or else we could be, like, disaster zone.
Yeah, they absolutely need to be in the playoff pick. This is the thing I mentioned earlier, that my spreadsheet that I showed you with all the different picks in the NBA and all the different protections. It's always the funniest when a pick gets left unprotected and things don't go exactly how you planned. Now, Bo Horvat's really good.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe this is not that big a concern for the Islanders. It's a bit of a bet on yourself, bet on your team move from Lou. You know, the prospect capital as well is interesting. I was talking to during the break, Scott Wheeler of The Athletic, who does, you know, a load of work on prospect rankings and things like that. He's got Ratti right in between Knies and Niemela. So if you're looking for the Leafs comparison, he's maybe a shade above Niemela, a step below Knies in terms of prospect value. And then again, the Leafs a little more certain that pick would not be conveyed in the lottery.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that Leafs pick,
it's a more valuable pick when it's coming from the Islanders, yes. Even if it's lottery protected.
Yes. That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. I don't think
because the Leafs aren't going to miss the playoffs this year.
Yeah. Yes. So you would have gotten their first round pick this year, which would be in the 20s somewhere.
Now I haven't dove into, you know, the quality of the late first round draft prospects this year versus, you know, the 10 to 20 range next year or whatever. I'll leave that for the Scott Wheelers of the world. But yeah, I think what you're taking here is, unless if you want to put the Leaf perspective on it, let's slide Kerfoot in the Beauvillier spot because the salaries match up. Maybe, you know, Kerfoot's a year closer, or he is a UFA this year, 1 year earlier. But in terms of prospect capital, you would have probably had to go Knies and a first along with Kerfoot to match this deal, at least on projected draft pick value and the value of each individual prospect.
What I'm interested to find out about is the thing that we obviously talked about, and that will be an obvious talking point going forward, is the extension that must be coming from the Islanders to Bo Horvat, and whether a conversation between, and I think the Canucks have been allowing Horvat's representatives to talk to potential suitors in trade, and whether something's already figured out, we'll find out in the coming moments, and perhaps from our next guest even, Elliott Friedman. Joins us on the Fan Drive Time right now. How's it going, Elliot?
Not bad. Not bad at all. Dinner interrupted, but yeah. Other than that, all it's good.
Fun. Yeah, sorry about that. So what is your first blush take on this trade? Again, Anthony Beauvillier, Atu Ratti, a second-round pick, who a center prospect who is 20 years old, has already reached the National Hockey League, and a protected 2023 first-round pick going from the Islanders to the Canucks in exchange for Bo Horvat. What's your first blush take?
Well, my first blush take is that this is exactly what the Islanders needed to do. They need scoring badly, and Horvat has shown that he's a scorer. I'm not surprised that they were the team. I'm a little surprised at the timing. I didn't know it would be today, but, you know, we did mention on the pod this morning that we'd heard the Islanders were in it. So I'm not surprised it's the Islanders, but I'm surprised it's today. When I look at the return for Vancouver, the Islanders were smart to protect the pick this year after the big mess at that Florida-Montreal trade. You're very smart to protect these picks. I think the interesting thing for me is that, you know, it's what do they think of Ratu? Like, you know, just in terms of the player that you're hoping you're getting that's going to be a big part of your future, you know, Beauvillier's got one more year and then he's a UFA. So the Canucks get a year and a half of a look at him to see what they've got. But Ratu's the guy. Like, and that's not always an easy place to be because he's going to be intensely watched because he's the key part of the deal. I think he's really talented. But, you know, the way he develops and the way he goes is going to determine how this trade is remembered for the Canucks.
Elliot, when you mention the timing, we know that Lou Lamoriello has a bit of an inclination to do his work early. And obviously the Islanders, you know, the marginal value of getting Horvat a month early when you're in that tight of a playoff race is fairly obvious. From the Canucks side, do you get the sense that they canvassed the league on Bo Horvat and didn't think that there would be a bidding war that pushed this higher? Or is Ratu just the guy for them? Like, I understand the Islanders side to pull the trigger early a little bit more than the Canucks side.
Well, I think they must have just really, well, hear what they have to say, Alvin or whoever, but it says to me they had to really like the player. And I'm talking about Ratu and Beauvillier in this. You know, I know there was, I think the Islanders wanted to do this fast. I think they want to get him in. Look, as far as we know, and the tough thing about saying this stuff is we don't have all the information yet, the Canucks were not giving permission for anyone to talk to Bo. I do think an extension, I'll put it this way, I believe an extension is going to come here. I believe the Islanders did this deal with the intention of getting him extended, and I wouldn't be surprised if they're working on it right now. And if it's not something that happens immediately, at least you get a trial run with him where you can say, all right, we want to get you extended. Like, if you'll remember, Lamoriello did a deal with Pageau where I think, if I recall correctly, they did the extension the same day, but I think he had permission then. So this to me is the Islanders saying, we want this player. We want this player long term. We're going to be aggressive to do it. And I've just got to think that when they threw a guy like Ratu on the table, the Canucks just said, that's the kind of player that we want to have here for a while.
Elliot, forgive my NBA brain with this, but when it comes to, hey, they didn't give permission to talk to Horvat, but the Islanders seem to have a confidence level here in being able to extend him. His agent, Patrick Morris, has five Islanders already on his roster sheet. I do wonder maybe there's a relationship side there. In terms of what a Horvat extension looks like, do we have a sense yet of the size or scope of such a deal?
No, I wouldn't. I would assume, like, put it this way, I think the market for him was probably around 8x8. I'm not sure that's what it's going to end up being. It might be less than that. I mean, it all depends. But that's what the market for him is. So, you know, maybe he takes a little bit less. I don't know. Well, put it, nobody's answering my notes right now.
Rude.
Blake, I know it's very rude. I'm quite upset about it, actually. Like I'm high school again, but that says to me that they're working on this. I just don't think if you're the Islanders you're Lou Lamoriello, you're doing this deal without having some confidence or desire to extend them.
Yeah, it's weird to go acquire a rental, even if you have playoff aspirations. You're not currently in a playoff spot, and it's a month before the deadline. It's a curious move if an extension isn't coming. All right, before we let you go, because you're a busy man now, you got to go do TV. Is this the start of something? Like, we're more than a month away from the deadline. Is it possible we get a run here?
I sure hope so. I really do think that hopefully this knocks things loose.
Yeah.
You know, it's still a tight cap, not a lot of room league, but Like, that's the one thing about Lamoriello is when he decides he wants to get something done, like, these are two old school guys, Lamoriello and Rutherford. And they've never been afraid to make moves. And when they want to get things done, they find ways to get things done. And I hope we see a little bit more of that. I think in Vancouver, it's the start of something that could be pretty big.
Elliot, appreciate the time, and we'll watch you on the TV in mere moments.
All right. Thanks, guys. Appreciate
it. See ya. Elliot Friedman. Just frankly, if this is a rental from the Islanders and, like, hey, the fans would be geeked, that'd be cool. It's an asinine move. Like,
oh, yeah, it can't be. There's, like, that's kind of, I was trying to pull out of Elliot there with the NBA comparison that, like, yeah, if this, like, Horvat's agent has five Islanders on his roster.
Right.
You can have these conversations without having these conversations.
Right.
Like, yeah. Hey, I'm going to call you. I just wanted to check in on how Josh Bailey's doing. I think we should have that conversation. Now, maybe Josh was feeling like a new centerman who's 27 years old. And if you could trade for someone like that, what might you be willing to pay for him?
No kidding.
Just kicking it around at the water cooler, hypothetically.
Yeah, you don't often, though, see these moves for teams outside of the playoffs before the deadline. This is, yeah, sure, like an off-season move might have made sense for the Islanders to go into the free agent waters.
I do think, though, if you think that you can extend him and you think that he makes enough of a difference for you to get in this playoff mix, jumping early, like I said, Elliot, the Islanders' side of moving early here makes all the sense in the world to me, right? The reason that buying teams wait until late is because the selling teams are sitting back saying, well, we'll just wait if you don't give us what you want. The Islanders are in a very tight playoff race here, missed the playoffs a season ago, probably want to get back there like now.
Yeah, and Lou Lamoriello's not getting any younger.
Neither is their roster. They're a pretty old group. So I don't know, like Zach Parise, Semyon Varlamov, Matt Martin, Josh Bailey, like those guys aren't getting younger either. Anders Lee's in his mid-30s, so... Yeah, I think now is the time for this Islanders group. Now, they probably look at the season that Ilya Sorokin is having and the year that Bo Horvat's having and think this could be not only a playoff team, but a playoff team with a bullet if they get in. We'll have to see how these pieces go. I don't know, you know, exactly how they would get to that point.
Yeah.
They didn't look super great when I saw them down at Scotiabank Arena the other night.
They didn't exactly look like a Bo Horvat away, gotta say.
They did in the first period. They kind of did look like a Bo Horvat away.
Yeah.
And then
they play three of those, though, right?
Yeah. The next two periods, they look like they should be investing pretty heavily in things like unprotected 2024 first round draft pick and Atu Ratu. Yeah.
From the Canucks side of it, And I know, yeah, that's the area. And I'm sure so many of these questions will be answered when both teams do their media availabilities in the coming moments, which, yeah.
I believe the Canucks is underway.
Okay, so we'll give you some information on that when we have it for you. But I do recall seeing, like, some pontifications about the Bo Horvat thing, especially when you make a coaching change, that, like, just get the vibes. Like, just, like, let's move on. This thing, the sword of Damocles that's... hanging over everybody's head, the guy that's wearing the C, who's been the face of the franchise here for the last half decade, let's just rip the Band-Aid off. Now, that can't supersede value. I would hope for the Canucks' sake that it wouldn't. Would it surprise me, given some of the recent moves surrounding that team? Maybe not, Blake, but, like, yeah, there's a reason why usually players of this magnitude don't move a month plus before the deadline. Is because you wait for the bidding war.
Bo Horvat and Rick Tocchet just can't get on the same page a couple minutes
in. Like, Rick Tocchet's like, hey, this is my team. This is the way we're going to play. And these are the messages I want to impart. And then that guy over there who's the leader in points and emotionally of this team and wearing the C, I know he's going to be gone in a month. But, yeah, still take what I'm saying and apply it.
Here's the other thing, too, for Vancouver. And they're not going to want to say this publicly, but the earlier you trade Bo Horvat, the likelier it is you slide down those lottery rankings a little bit too, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where you are...
That's a great point.
You are in a pretty tight Toronto Raptors-ish race here. I know that's what you were going to go for there.
No, yeah, it's a great point and one that I'm glad you brought up, because people have been calling for this, right? Mm-hmm. They're like, hey, man, you stink. You're going to stink. This is a draft in which you would love to stink. I think that's the... It has to be part of the motivating factor for the Vancouver Canucks to bring back the local kid.
Right. So what do you think is more valuable, right? The gap in prospect equity between Rati and whoever the prospect that a team might come a month from now with, and the gap between a top 12 protected 2023 first that becomes an unprotected 2024 first versus what the other team has. Is it worth waiting that out to try to marginally improve the quality of those assets, get a top 10 protected pick, get a prospect who you like slightly better, or is it better to fall two spots in the standings by moving Horvat a month early and you've got a 2% better shot at landing Connor Bedard? Like,
it's weird that, like, you're looking at mere circumstances here. Like, the Islanders are like, we got to get moving early because we got to make up ground here, make the playoffs. So we're going to act a month before the deadline so Bo Horvat can start scoring us goals and winning us games today. And the Canucks are like, we need to lose yesterday. Like, we need to get losing. Come on. How can we do that? Let's trade away our best player very early.
I understand how leverage works, and I understand the timing of these things in every league, but it drove me nuts all Blue Jays season too, when like early June comes around and it's very, very, very obvious that that team needs relief pitching help. Yeah. And everyone's just like, yeah, but we don't talk about that until mid-July. I'm like, okay, but you need it now. And you know that these teams are bad.
Yeah.
No, go take their relievers. Go take your Scott's Barlow or whatever.
And, but yeah, and when you're talking about relievers, you're talking about a return and like the acquisition cost that is not anywhere near what we're talking about, like a leading scorer on a team and a guy who's going into a year in which he's going to sign a massive seven-year deal for like close to $10 million per, right?
So again, let's play out the scenario. And this is just to use a Toronto example. I'm not saying the Leafs should have done this or the Leafs are the only team in the world. They are. But let's say the two offers Vancouver was deciding between were Kerfoot, Niemela, and the Leafs on protected first this year, or Beauvillier, Ratti, and the Isles pick with the protections. And the Canucks preferred the Ratti deal unless the Leafs bumped Niemela to Nyes.
Mm-hmm.
Again, you're talking about waiting a month, 5-6 weeks, hoping that the Leafs are willing to bump that prospect up to someone you like slightly more. But again, during that time, Bo Horvat is helping you collect points that you don't want. You know, not by all accounts, Bo Horvat would not be the type of guy to undercut a coach. But like, again, the coach is trying to take this team in a different direction that everyone in the room knows Bo Horvat is not going to be a part of. You know, you could pick, I don't have a deep familiarity with, say, I don't know, Minnesota's prospects, but let's say they're in the mix and it's the same kind of, they're looking for the same kind of thing. If you don't want to use the Leafs example, use the Minnesota Wild example. Is it worth waiting out that slight edge in return? And that's projected return. It's not a certainty. Or is it worth, you know, getting on with your business and making a deal with a trade partner that was obviously very eager?
Yeah. And lose a few more games. So yeah, we can judge it now and we will.
I'm willing to judge it now.
Even though we have no idea who Atu Ratti is, but
I'll say this. I think it's probably an okay sign for the Canucks that I am so wired to just assume they made a terrible move all the time that I'm willing to hear this one out.
Yeah. I think when I look at it, there's two things that spring to mind. Well, two really, that there's really two draft implications that come off of this. And the one is like lose, lose, lose. And if you win the draft lottery, it's almost like nothing else matters. You have Connor Bedard and you can point to this is like, holy cow. Remember all those games we lost in February? Thank you, Bo Horvat for departing. And thank you that, Atu Ratti, you know, we stashed him in the AHL and Beauvillier, you know, wasn't that helpful, that we lost all those games. And the second one is the Islanders unprotected for next year.
2024, yeah.
So you're like, as a Canucks fan, I think pretty clearly you're rooting for the Islanders to lose, to stay out of the playoffs this year so that the pick does not convey and it becomes totally unprotected for next year.
Correct. And you could convince yourself that you want the pick this year under the following circumstance, which is, you know, that pick conveys to you right now would be 13th overall.
Yeah.
Now that
if you win the lottery and then you got two, you got well, Bedard and number 13, and those guys are on the same.
Well, what I was going to say is if you don't win the lottery, you have another high pick to potentially dangle to move up. Mm-hmm. Now, no one's
trading Bedard.
No one is trading Bedard, but it's an asset still. And honestly, like that unprotected 2024 Islanders pick would be a big asset as well if they're not committed to a multi-year thing. And if anyone is curious, I know we do the NBA trade talk stuff enough that most people have the handle on the lottery. The Islanders pick is not so surprisingly protected at the level where you know, just where you have 0% odds at the number one pick.
Yeah, so that's nice. I would just say before we take the break that I want to be on record as saying the Toronto Maple Leafs should have given up Matthew Nyes, Alex Kerfoot, and their unprotected picks forever.
Sure. I'm not saying that that was a possibility. It's just the closest comparison I could think of to localize the Bo Horvat trade. And look, a Bo Horvat trade was probably not realistic for the Leafs if we assume that Bo Horvat would not be happy with being in a situation where he's not getting extended. The Leafs don't have the cap sheet to be able to do, say, an 8x8 for another guy.
Yep.
But the Leafs are probably in the mix for something like this. So it's interesting to see the price set really early as well. The other thing that could be a market setter here is what does that Horvat extension look like? And do we hear what it is far enough ahead of the trade deadline that teams can kind of adjust this asking price? Because, you know, if we look at this after and it's Beauvillier-Raté and the pick for Bo Horvat a rental, or Bo Horvat and the right to sign him to 8x8, say, those two things look very different in terms of what market they're setting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, there's a lot of fallout here. And yeah, again, we'll judge it after we see what the draft picks end up being, and we'll see where the Vancouver Canucks end up drafting this season. We'll also see what the deals for, you know, Ryan O'Reilly looks like a Patrick Kane. Like we'll see.
That's what I'm saying with the, we'll see what the Horvat conversation looks like from here, because if you are in a Ryan O'Reilly trade conversation right now and St. Louis is like, well, this is it. This is what we want. This is what the market said. And yeah. And then like, if Bo Horvat looks like a rental, that's a reasonable case to be made. If Bo Horvat looks like someone who's a long-term piece at 27 and Ryan O'Reilly is about to turn 32, it's not quite as helpful a comparison.
Well, and this is, before we take the break, this is what is a little confusing to me. If in fact, and again, we don't know definitively yet, if the Canucks in fact did not allow the Islanders to talk to Horvat's representatives before the trade was made, yes, and you're doing the air quotes, right? Like, yeah, they can back channel it or whatever, but if they didn't give the go-ahead to allow that, why didn't they? Because you can, your
it
leverage
would increase your market.
Yeah, exactly, right? Like, you can demand more if you're saying, this isn't a rental for you. You got this guy for 8 more years. Like,
I guess
forget it.
You worry about setting that precedent with your organization, and then also maybe that Horvat only, you know, like say the Islanders are offering 8x8,
and yeah, maybe it kills
and the
it.
Leafs come in and they're like 7x7, and the Canucks significantly want the Leafs trade package more.
Mm.
Like, does that make things complicated? Now, again, you're trading a guy away. It's not like he has a no trade clause, a full one. Like, it's, he doesn't have a ton of choice in the matter. Man, those jerseys look good, eh?
Oh yeah, the old Canucks one with the skate, for sure. Yeah.
All right. Also, Elliot looking great. Thanks for coming on, Elliot.
Yeah, he always does his Skype Zoom conversations from like it looks like a coffin. It's like a wood background.
Ron McLean made fun of him on Hockey Night the other night for it. He's like, thanks for dressing up and like getting a good background. Usually on Tim and Friends, you look like you're a hostage or something like that. It was pretty funny to hear Ron McLean roasting him.
Yeah, he's got it. I mean, he must have a memorabilia room or something. But yeah, all right. Anyways, we'll get the Vancouver perspective in mere moments as we'll talk to Thomas Drantz of The Athletic. Again, Canucks trading Bo Horvat to the New York Islanders for Anthony Beauvillier, centerman Atu Ratti, 20-year-old former second-round pick, and a protected 2023 first-round pick. It is lottery-protected, top 12 this year. and becomes unprotected next season. Thomas Drantz next as the Fan Drive Time continues. Ben Ennis, Blake Murphy, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
The most opinionated Maple Leaf show out there. Real Kipper and Bourne. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Fan Drive Time, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, Ben Ennis, Blake Murphy. Again, Canucks acquiring Anthony Beauvillier, Atu Ratti, and a protected 2023 first-round draft pick from the New York Islanders as Bo Horvat is headed to Long Island. Let's talk to Thomas Drantz out in BC working for The Athletic. How's it going, Thomas?
Well, I'm actually out in California, first day of vacation, so isn't that always the way?
Sorry.
And by the way, Atu Ratu for the Finnish center. But, yeah, I mean, that's not one I can blame you for. That's a pronunciation guide special coming back to the Vancouver Canucks.
Yeah, apologies to the Ratu family for that. What is your reaction to seeing the return for Bo Horvat, a trade that we all anticipated happening probably closer to March 3rd than, still in January?
Yeah, you know, look, I think the Horvat camp will be relieved that it got done quickly. Clearly it got done, pretty clear it got done without an extension. Although I suppose we'll wait and hear what Horvat and Lou Lamoriello have to say when they meet with the media in about 30 minutes over Zoom. But, you know, Jim Rutherford typically likes to get out in front of it. You know, he does like to get his business done early. The club has done so now, finally, here with Horvat. And the return is, you know, I think most Canucks fans are underwhelmed by the return. But I don't know that they should be. You know, I think the fact is that while the haul is a little bit low upside in terms of the NHL players involved, at least the deal looks squarely to the future. You know, Anthony Beauvillier, that's a third line winger in my view. And hardworking, got some speed. Toronto fans will be relatively familiar with him. His finishing game has fallen off this season, but that's not, you know, something that I worry too much about. I think he's got some skill. I just don't think he's a top-line piece, and that's fine. He's a player who's been available sort of quietly, I think, dating back to the offseason, from what I can gather asking around about Beauvillier over the past half hour. So, you know, that's sort of the make weight. You kind of need to have a salary coming back in the cap era, but it's a two-year deal only. I guess the one real inconvenience of it is that it's another winger making $3-plus million for a team that has Mikhaev at 4.75, Besser at 6.66, Kuzmenko at 5.5, Pearson at 3.25, although his status is very much up in the air. They've got a lot of money. They are overweight in terms of their investment on wingers, which, given the state of the blue line and the fact that the club's just lost their best matchup center, is far from ideal. Atu Ratu, sort of was like a high pedigree guy. He was one of those NHL prospects who was like famous and on watch as the next one from the age of about 16, but then kind of petered out before his draft year and ended up falling to the second round. He's rebounded since. He's an interesting player and one of those guys who has the physical tools to play in the NHL right now and sort of looks like a very safe bet to play NHL games, but maybe only a marginal chance of being a star right now. Granted, you would have said that about Bo Horvat at the age of 20, but, sort of lower upside pieces in terms of the players. Where I think I like this deal a fair bit more than market among Vancouver commentators to this point is the Canucks have effectively bought a massive fade position on Lou Lamoriello and the New York Islanders. And I think that's smart business. You know, I mean, I don't like to bet against a guy like Ilya Sorokin. It's not a safe bet. We're not talking minus 300 odds here that the Islanders bought him out next season. But if you were going to buy a fade position on a team, you know, doing it against a club that's been what, like 519 point percentage over the last 2 years, 20th in the NHL, pick his top 12 protected this year, which like feels like a 50-50 coin flip that it converts. And if it doesn't, it's unprotected in 2024 for a team that leans far too heavily on their goaltender, is relatively aging, doesn't have a ton of cap flexibility. to rely on to improve quickly. You know, a lot of that part of it, I really like. Like, I really like. I think at the very least, while this return is probably a little bit underwhelming overall, at least it's a deal that looks squarely to the future. And for Canucks fans who've been pleading with this organization to do precisely that, I think it at least checks that box. It doesn't feel like a deal where winning next season was the major priority. And in that, I think this deal almost comes across my desk as something of a relief.
It's nice to see them, you know, making that pivot and looking ahead. In terms of, I've got a million questions on the fade on the Islanders here, because I find them fascinating and I find that choice fascinating. I guess the most immediate is this pick will convey this year if the Islanders can turn it around and make the playoffs. Bo Horvat is now number one on that team in goal scoring this year and points. We've seen him take yet another step forward at age 27, 21.7% shooting percentage this year. This is a guy who got a couple of Selke votes last year. So a nice two-way game here. Is Bo Horvat enough in your estimation to get the Islanders to the playoffs, given, you know, how few weapons he'll, not that he had a ton of weapons in Vancouver, but this is not exactly an all-star roster he's joining here.
No, but Horvat's a good player. Horvat strengthens that team somewhat appreciably. The problem, I think, from an Islanders perspective is not just the fact that you have to catch the Washington Capitals, for example, is that you also have to fend off a Florida Panthers team that I think is materially better than them on true talent, and fend off this hard-charging Buffalo Sabres team that I think has a ton of flexibility to answer this move, right, over the coming weeks, and ultimately I think has more juice, right? Like, I just don't know that the Islanders, like, are the Islanders that much better than the Capitals and the, I guess, the Penguins could fade. That would be sort of the other team that I'd eye as, you know, a club that could potentially have some trouble here, could sputter down the stretch given the uncertainty that they have in goal. But do they have more juice than either of those teams? And even if you think they do they have more juice than the other teams chasing, than Florida, than the Buffalo Sabres? Like, I don't know about that, right? I just think those other teams have more, with or without Horvat joining the Islanders. I think they're going to be in tough to make the playoffs. And seeing as it's a top 12 pick that converts, you know, the fact that they've added Horvat, like, what I think it really does is makes it very, very much likely that the Islanders, or it makes it more likely anyway, that that pick will be one that does not convert to the Vancouver Canucks necessarily this season. They'd really have to fall flat here for the Canucks to get that pick. I mean, there's going to be 16 teams. So long as they're one of the four teams that misses most narrowly, they'll be able to keep their pick, provided that they don't win the lottery as well. You know, I do think that that's sort of where, like, that feels to me like the right space for them. So I do sort of wonder if the most likely outcome here is that the Canucks get a 2023 pick in the teens, which, for my money, having been at the CHL Top Prospects game just last week, is still a fantastic asset for this Canucks team, given the state of this 2023 draft class. But that said, I love the upside of that pick, the chance that if things go one way, it could roll over. You know, I love the idea of taking a swing, particularly given the state that the Canucks find themselves, where, you know, they're not very good now. They don't have a ton of cap space. They don't have a very good prospect system. You know, you kind of need to place these types of high upside, high leverage bets in some way. And while this trade doesn't return one of those in the form of an active player, it does at least in terms of one of the assets. And for me, that was the sort of return that this club really needed to get. They really needed to take a roll of the dice that could be transformative in trading their captain. At the very least, they've accomplished that. And to me anyway, based on my expectations, I think that's a better outcome than certainly I was prepared for.
I like that way of framing it. You know, floor does some things for you, but floor doesn't change the direction of your franchise. Upside does. Ceiling changes the direction of your franchise. So getting that potential lottery ticket is nice. Drance, I know you're on vacation, so I won't keep you too much longer, but you mentioned that one of the kind of senses of relief you feel here is that the Canucks are actually doing the right thing and looking ahead to the future and trying to, you know, stock up that cupboard. What is next for them over these next couple of weeks in your estimation?
Well, I mean, I think all eyes turn to Luke Shen now. Luke Shen's a 33-year-old right-handed defender, obviously, like, plays the game the right way, bona fides, multiple Stanley Cup wins on his resume. Toronto fans are familiar with him. He's played everywhere. He's been around. Great person. You know, interesting player. And here's a fun commentary on the state of how difficult it is to improve your blue line. You can file this one under reasons not to speculate about the Canucks about the Toronto Maple Leafs trading Timothy Liljegren. Luke Shen currently ranks second among all NHL right-handed defensemen who are pending UFAs by points. Going into this offseason. So, you know, although Luke Shen might not be a name that quickens the pulse off the bat, that's a pretty big return that the club can probably be count on netting over the next 5 weeks. I think that's a really crucial one to watch for here. The Canucks have some other business to attend to, some pending restricted free agents who have high qualifying offers. Guys, you'll have to be pretty careful about navigating in terms of what their next deals look like. Guys like Ethan Bear, who are building pretty hardy arbitration cases, I'd expect the club to have some trepidation in terms of how they approach that. And more than anything, honestly, the main thing that this organization really needs to get to is to turn the page on being on the front page every single day, mostly for negative reasons, in NHL terms. You've got a new head coach now. You've traded your captain. You've extended Andre Kuzmenko. You know, most of what we're talking about now is, like, can they get a return for Colin Delia? Or how do they approach Ethan Bear's situation given his high qualifying offer? Like, finally, the business that this club needs to attend to now is, like, desperately unsexy, right? And I think that's a really good thing as this club looks to put what's been an absolute nightmare season, a chronic whirlwind of negativity and drama, sort of behind them. On the other side of the All-Star break, when the club gathers in Newark, under a new head coach, with a new captain, with sort of a fresh slate, they can just focus on kind of playing hockey over the balance of the season. And I bet that's a welcome respite for an organization that's basically been in siege mode all season long.
Oh, yeah, they've been good for people in my line of work like train wrecks, because they've been that this season. Drance, I appreciate the time. Thanks for doing this.
Cheers. Thanks for having me, gentlemen. Bye.
Bye. It's Thomas Drance at The Athletic, who I don't know well enough to just talk to him by using his last name. But I did anyway.
It's weird. Like, when you called him Thomas, I was like, who?
Yeah, that's his name.
No, he and I go way, way back to when I lived in Vancouver. So,
all right.
Yeah.
Yeah, seems like a good dude.
I used to do Canucks Army with him when he ran that site.
All right. Yeah, you've been – there is not a sports blog that you haven't been affiliated with.
This is true.
Okay, so it's an interesting part of this that I hadn't thought about as well. That there is, like, a sweet spot in this because it's only top 12 protected. It's not lottery protected. Mm-hmm. So if the season ended today, the Islanders didn't win a lottery, that would be the pick that is conveyed to the Canucks today.
Right, but it's also – there's that spot – like, it's not just Connor Bedard in the draft, but the number 12 spot has a 0% chance at the number one pick. Like, you're only...
That's it. That's what they're protecting themselves against giving up Connor Bedard.
Yes.
That's it.
I don't think they would care as much if it were the number two or number three pick.
Right. It's all about Connor Bedard. Get it. Understand. I think what Thomas said about how this front office, who has overvalued its own players to a large extent, and that's part of the reason they're in this horrible no man's land place where it's not a young team. It's a team that, you know, just signed a forward for a lot of money and maybe inhibited them from extending Bo Horvat, who's also shooting at an unsustainable pace, which we'll talk about maybe secondarily.
I tried to bait Thomas on that.
Well,
he did
scoff. He kind of like, yeah, you're right. Because I don't think Bo Horvat is now going to shoot 25% for the rest of his career.
He's just south of 22%, but he's consistently been like a high teens guy. So
okay,
maybe it doesn't come down that much. But yeah, he's having a career year.
He's almost at his career high in goals.
He is, actually. I mean, he's 27.
Mm-hmm.
So that's right around the time we might expect a guy like him to peak. It feels like he's much older than that. Like, it feels like we've been talking about this guy since I lived in Vancouver and was doing Canucks Army with Thomas. But yeah, it's a long way out.
But this is it. Like, the Canucks, like, being between two things, like not having a direction, is the worst place you can be in sports. Is either you're looking for towards the future, or you're doubling down on what you think is a good team. Turns out the Canucks weren't very good. So at least now that they decided, they're thinking about the future.
And I think what you said a moment ago about them not picking a direction prior is a mischaracterization, because I think that they had a level of like hubris and arrogance. And this is, you get this a lot out of that Vancouver hockey market, that this front office has, like, for the last little while, thought that they were doing the right things.
Dude,
right?
We,
like,
thought JT Miller was on the block.
The bang and banning. I get it. It's a tough spot, and it's tough to finally admit and pivot off of that, especially when it feels like a long road back. But you got to do it at some point. You got to make the hard choices. And if Bo Horvat wasn't going to stick around there, it sucks to trade your captain, but you just hope Atu Ratu and that 2024 unprotected first round pick are something else.
Well, the other part of it, and we'll maybe move on after this, is that there is, like, still more than a month to go before the deadline. The idea of Bo Horvat not signing an extension, the Islanders saying, you know what, we'll flip him again for a bigger return than you got, Canucks. Like, can't totally rule it out. Be shrewd. I don't know how that would work as far as the draft pick protection. Would it still be the island? I don't know. I don't know how that works. I guess it would still have to be the Islanders pick that is involved there in some way, you could just trade Bo Horvat and try and recoup the assets that you gave up for him, and then maybe end up with a better haul than the Canucks got.
Certainly don't think at that time you're going to be able to get a better pick than the one the Islanders have given up here, but maybe, I mean, all prospects are eye of the beholder. But yeah, maybe you turn around and get a slightly better Atu Ratu. I don't know. I don't think that is the plan for the Islanders here.
Probably not. But you know what they say about best laid plans. We'll see. Anyways, it's always fun to get live breaking news on the radio program. And yeah, maybe this is the start of a real flow of trades in the National Hockey League. It's very bizarre to see a trade of this magnitude this far away from the deadline, though. All right.
Less so on the NBA side, because the bizarro decisions that these leagues have made have their trade deadlines a month apart. Mm-hmm. We're like 10 days from the NBA one.
Yeah. As mentioned, a week from Thursday, we'll be on this radio station for an extended fan drive time, 3 hours on deadline day. We'll be on after the deadline, which is what? It's at 3 o'clock?
3 p.m. deadline. So you'll have an extended version of the Raptor show with William Liu. They're going multiple hours, and then we'll go multiple hours as well. We always go multiple hours, but even more multiple hours.
Yeah, so the Raptors, there's a number of little nuggets. Well, one is that they're 2-1 through the first three games of what I guess is a season-defining seven-game road trip. And I was dubious that there were still decisions to be made by this Raptors front office as far as whether they'd be buyers or sellers, or maybe not buyers, but like sellers or stand patters. And at least Shams Charania of The Athletic is indicating that they're going to wait until the very last second to decide.
We knew that, though.
Yeah, I guess.
Also, the framing, Shams is my guy, but the framing of league sources believe the Raptors will make a decision by the trade deadline on whether to buy or sell or stand pat. Yeah, you kind of, you don't have a choice but to make a decision by then, because
that's why it's called deadline day.
Yeah.
Your deadline.
Just a little funny there. I don't know. But
he also said the Knicks and Suns are among the interested suitors in Raptors forward OG Anunoby. Sources say New York has shown a willingness to offer multiple first round picks for Anunoby, according to those sources. The Suns, the Raptors play tonight, meanwhile, have control of all their first round picks, 8 in total, through 2030, also expected to be interested in OG Anunoby. Who wouldn't be? So,
correct. Slight correction. They only have you can only trade first 7 years out, not 8. But that means you could give up 4 picks, because the NBA has a rule that you cannot trade future first round picks in consecutive years. It's a weird loophole where every year at the draft, you see, like, the moment the draft ends, teams are more willing to trade first round picks because it doesn't count as consecutive years anymore because the draft is in the past. But yes, Phoenix has the full suite of their picks. The New York Knicks have a boatload of extra stuff. They own Dallas's pick this year, Detroit's pick this year, Washington's pick this year. Now, there are protections on those things such that Detroit and Washington probably won't convey, but the protections decline year over year. They also own a 2025 Milwaukee first and a bunch of extra seconds. So the Knicks are an interesting trade partner, especially if you like, I don't know. I don't know that they'd put Quentin Grimes in a deal, but your guy Grimey.
Yeah, my guy Grimey could be headed back in any OG Anunoby trade. Yeah. But I mean, it would be a swath of draft picks. Michael Grange also with a story out on sportsnet.ca in which he had some quotes from OG Anunoby, which are very OG Anunoby-like, like not necessarily surprising, but not exactly like throwing total cold water on the idea that he's unhappy with his role or that he necessarily would prefer to leave.
Wouldn't frame it like that. Like, it's OG Anunoby. It's exactly what you would expect him to say. Like, he didn't not throw cold water on it because he doesn't answer questions like that. He's not that guy.
No, it's true. All right. We only have a couple minutes here, but part of what's interesting, and there's so many aspects of what the Raptors do in the next week and a half that is interesting, but that Precious Achiuwa has returned from his injury and looked as real good as he has, being inserted into the starting lineup, being a guy that protects the rim, that, and as you wrote about on sportsnet.ca last week, something that has been sorely missing from this Raptors defensive scheme. The offensive skill set, I don't know if he's all of a sudden turned. I mean, recently he's shot the three well as well.
Well, also, the three, whatever. Like, if you're a big man, the three is kind of just an icing skill with Achiuwa's player type. He's shooting 73% at the rim, though.
Yeah.
And that's the issue where, like, he was, like, Biombo-esque at times last year. Well, with the, like, he shot 61%. He's a center who shot 61% at the rim last year. Mm-hmm. That's, like, what Fred VanVleet shoots at the rim.
Yeah.
He's up to 73% now.
Yeah, and the eye test would match that. He just looks a little bit more in control when he's attacking the rim.
I would push back on the part of this that has to do with him being a starter or other guys being out. This started before he entered the starting lineup. This goes back to, you know, my favorite talking point last year was if we gave most improved player to the guy who improved the most from day one to the end of the season, it would have been Precious Achiuwa. The reason this stands out so much right now is not because Precious Achiuwa doesn't have this and hasn't shown this, and we didn't think this was possible. It's because he started the season much worse than we expected and then had the worst injury of his entire life so far, missing 24 games.
Didn't Nick Nurse call him out early this season as well?
Yeah, and then he got hurt immediately.
Yeah.
But, like, Precious Achiuwa is good, and we were all really excited heading into this year after what he did late last season. So none of this should really be surprising, and I push back on the idea of, like, oh, it's because OG Anunoby's not in the lineup or now he's starting or anything like this. No, we've seen this since basically he got his cardio back under him, and we saw it for the whole second half of last year.
Yeah. I don't know if it necessarily makes it more palatable to trade away an OG Anunoby who's in the running for Defensive Player of the Year and is, like, that guy that,
here's
hits
the thing.
Threes at a league average rate.
Go look at the standings and click on the roster pages of the good teams. They all have more than one good player.
I'm starting to lose my mind a little bit with the
you have to trade this guy because this other guy's good. If this team had enough amazing players that there wasn't enough room for all of them, they wouldn't all be averaging 40 minutes a game and they wouldn't be five games below 500. You need lots of good players.
No doubt. Raptors have some, but yeah, for some reason they stink. All right, time now for Last Call, brought to you by Bet Rivers. It's a whole new game. As mentioned, Raptors in Phoenix to take on a Suns team that has disappointed. They've been banged up as well. Suns 2-point favorites at home. Scotty Barnes, points, rebounds, assists, add them all up. The total is 28.5. And, next year's Super Bowl odds are out. All right, Bills fans, plus 650. Bills to win the Super Bowl in 2024. That was Last Call, brought to you by Bet Rivers. It's a whole new game. Bo Horvat traded to the Islanders. See what tomorrow brings. It's been the Fan Drive Time. Ben Ennis, Blake Murphy. Sportsnet 590, The Fan. See you tomorrow.